to involve me in this this fabulous building that you have here, this fabulous site. Before I came along to speak today, I asked my Auntie Veronica for her memories of the Festival of Britain. She thought for a while and she began speaking about Kenneth Moore and Christopher Plummer and Susanna York and Hermann Göring. And I realised then actually she was thinking of the Battle of Britain, and not only that, the 1969 film of the Battle of Britain, she has absolutely no memory of coming to the Festival of Britain whatsoever. It's gone with the skyline, I'm afraid, her memories. But the person who was involved in the Battle of Britain and in the Festival of Britain, of course, was Churchill. It was Churchill's idea to celebrate the centenary of the Great Exhibition of 1851. And although the Crystal Palace has long gone and that site's forgotten, we're still here, that legacy we have. And the thing that Churchill did, I think, that was encouraging was he gave the Festival of Britain to that new generation of architects, that new generation of artists, that new generation of thinkers, to make something new here. Because of the context of the late 1940s, the austerity that those people faced, having been through 6 years of war, having seen, you know, many of them living in cities around Britain, seen their cities, some of them pounded into rubble, they needed something to remind them what it was all for, something that assured them that the terrible conflict that they'd been through had preserved the essential things about what it meant to be British. Now, it would have been very, very easy for them, that 1951 generation, to sort of go back to their own childhoods, to set up something here that was nostalgic, you know, looking back to some kind of chocolate box idea of what Britain was. Instead, they came up with this imagery, this fabulous Festival of Britain imagery that still, even though it's 60 years old, still speaks to us of a modernism. And they were a generation, the 1951 generation, they were a kind of strange group of people. They were perhaps the last people to be really, really English. Before the war, they grew up listening to English music, they grew up eating English food, they grew up wearing English clothes. And they faced in the late 40s some incredible changes. I mean, what did it mean to be British? They'd grown up with the coins in their pocket, proclaiming the monarch to be the Emperor of India. That disappeared from the coins in 1948. Hungary were about to come to Wembley and beat England at football for the very first time. Suez was just around the corner. These were generation between, you know, they didn't know that the generation behind them would reimagine Englishness, would produce the Beatles, would produce Bobby Moore, would produce a different kind of Britain. They, in some ways, they had to put something down in a very dark, austere, probably rainy, if I remember rightly, when they opened the Festival of Britain, it was pissing down the rain, if I remember rightly, a rather wet and drab decade. Between the end of the Second World War and the arrival of rock and roll. And the one thing that still, I believe, still stands up and still speaks to us is what they managed to do on this site at the Festival of Britain. Now, if we went to the festival today, there would be many things that we'd be familiar with, the geology that they had on display there, about actually, you know, what our country is made of, the history. Perhaps some of the industry would be different now, probably a bit much more corporate and much more about service industries. And thanks very much to our friends from MasterCard for coming down and sponsoring today. But the one thing that I think would really resonate with us was their question of what it actually means to be British. Now, there are some people who know exactly what that is. They've got it all sussed. It is to do with the two young people who are getting married in Westminster Abbey next weekend. It's to do with the flag. It's to do with our history. But actually, you know, you'd think having come through the war, they would have a strong idea of it, but actually they didn't have a strong idea. When they came to put together a pavilion that addressed that issue of identity, they couldn't even think of a name for it, and eventually they gave it a rather abstract name, the Lion and the Unicorn. Interestingly, that was the name of the book that George Orwell wrote, perhaps the greatest evocation of a very English kind of socialism that Orwell wrote during the Second World War, when the bombs were falling on London, and he asked himself whether or not he felt this country as an international socialist was worth dying for, and he felt it was. They called it the lion and unicorn, you know, an animal that's never really been lived in Britain, the lion, and an animal that's never existed, the unicorn, to bring these two together. What were they trying to tell us? It was an amazing pavilion. I would love to have actually been in there, because it did talk about the characteristics of the English. Now, you know, the British rather, sorry. You know, if we, you know, how will we begin today to talk about those things? The ambiguity that they felt is the ambiguity that we feel. As Britons, all of us have two flags. We have the flag, the Union Jack, and then the flag of our country of birth, which is not always England, Scotland, Ireland, or Wales. They kind of brought together the things that they felt most spoke to them about our characteristics. But they had a little corner of the pavilion which they put over to eccentricities. And I think that sort of, in that part of the festival, there was something there, the way something that they weren't sure of. In fact, in the brochure, it talked about the characteristics of the British being something intangible. The lion, they said, in the catalogue, expressed our strength as a country, but the unicorn expressed our imagination as a people. And the great thing about what goes on at this site is that it's always been art that has sought to try and explain who we are, to question who we are, to mess around with who we are. And that process carries on. I'll be performing over the weekend at the Queen Elizabeth Hall and out the front. Jude came up with this fabulous idea of something which we refer to as the Big Busk, which is basically, I invite people to come along with acoustic guitars and standing on the front terrace out there with some volunteers who hold up the chords for the guitar songs. We play through some busking standards. It's a lot of fun. It's very informal. If you play three chords on the guitar, you can qualify. You can come along. We'll be doing that on the Sunday. And then on the Saturday, rather, after the Royal Wedding. And then on the Sunday, it's May Day, International Workers' Day. We'll be having our own post-wedding celebrations there, if anybody wants to come and reconnect with the rest of the world, having spent a Friday afternoon deep in the very essences of Englishness. We'll be doing that there. But we will be doing exactly what they were trying to do and seeking to do in the Lion and the Unicorn Pavilion, which is to try and make some sense out of what it means to be here now. Thank you.